To open up the House Special Committee on Budget, the Subcommittee on General Government, Transportation, and Economic Development. This morning is Wednesday, June 29th, 2005. We're going to begin by opening up a public hearing on Senate Bill 162 relating to elections.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 162 comes to you from the House Committee on Elections and Rules. The bill in its original form requires elections in Oregon to be conducted only by mail. This is a cleanup bill, as I understand it, from the Secretary of State. There's also a set of Dash 5 amendments that I just received a few minutes ago, so don't know much about, but in summary, it looks like it's prohibiting new taxes on telecommunication carriers unless they are approved by a majority of or majority vote. So those are there for your consideration.
Do we have anyone out there that would like to speak on Senate Bill 162? Our witness registration is a little light on this one. Seeing none, any comments?
No, I think we have a taker.
We have a taker.
I didn't think Fred could sit back and say something.
Thank you, Representative.
Welcome, how are you?
Good. Good morning.
Before we begin, maybe we could get an explanation on the bow tie.
On the bow tie, yeah, that's right.
The dice, it's got dice on it.
Dominoes.
Oh, they're dominoes. Sorry, couldn't see under the fold there.
It's just hoping that you can line up the dominoes to score any game and tiny dice. Sure.
It's imminent.
That's what we hear.
A great-looking tie.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Fred Neal. I'm the campaign finance manager for the State Elections Division. I'm only here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 162 as introduced. It's the product of a lot of hard work with the county clerks and the elections division and the attorney general's office to clean up the statutes and remove, resolve some ambiguous provisions dealing with in reference to polling place elections as opposed to vote by mail, which is the norm and universally the norm in how elections are now conducted in the state of Oregon. We understand that there's amendments that remove all the provisions of 162 and replace it with new provisions. Those new provisions we have no position on. We're just here to ask for this committee's assistance and its members in ensuring that the good government provisions originally in 162 survive through some other venue before signing die, just in order to clean up the statutes and ensure that elections aren't as ambiguous in their interpretation as might be otherwise. Thank you.
Let me ask Monica this question really quick. Is there any reason why, with the relating clause, that we could not keep the current language and add this additional language?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have a question into Ledge Council concerning the relating clause and the amendments.
So we'll address that then if we go to work session on this.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to speak on Senate Bill 162? Seeing none, we are going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 162, and we're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 462461A, excuse me, relating to Notary Public. Monica.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2461A comes to you from the Committee on Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs. It requires notaries public to take 3 hours of continuing education and requires the Secretary of State to provide that training or approve the provision of training and the supplies. In reviewing this, we believe that there is no fiscal impact or a minimal fiscal impact to the Secretary of State.
Perfect. We have two folks who are signed up on the witness registration list. Why don't we call up first, why don't we have the Secretary of State's office come up and we'll have Tom come visit us first.
Welcome. Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Tom Rush from the Secretary of State's office. I do various things, including Notary Public. I'm a senior policy analyst. I worked on this bill for now two or three sessions. It's a pretty straightforward bill, and as Monica said, that there is no fiscal impact to this under the Ayn Gross version of the bill. Currently, there are a number of states who are starting to add notary education as a mandatory requirement for qualifying notaries in the country. It's a very desperate concern, actually. notaries all over the country have various levels of qualification. We know that even in our own state, though we are on the vanguard, on the forefront of education and training, we still know that notaries do a lot of bad notarizations, which harms commerce, which harms legal proceedings, which harms filings in the county clerk's office. And we have a member for the county clerks here to talk about that, if you will. Right now we do education as seminars throughout the state, and we know that only a fraction of the notaries that get commissioned actually go to these seminars.
So seminars are not required.
They're not required now. They're voluntary. They're free. And even at free, which is a very good price, as Todd Peterson used to say, they're not attending. And consequently, we have people out there who are not really up to snuff, as it were. We now know that Michigan and New York, because they do not trust other states' notaries, are requiring in their courts for certification of any notarization coming to them from out of state. So we know that nationally this is becoming a problem, and we'd like in Oregon to deal with our part of it. The model
Can you explain that really quick? Certification,
sure,
of a notary.
Of a notarization. Sometimes people call it authentication. If it was going to another country, it would be called an apostille. And what that says is that a notary is, when they do the notarization on a document, the Secretary of State or the county clerk in some states will then authenticate that notary is a good notary of the state, and that is their signature and seal on record. The primary reason they're doing this is that they believe that people are being fraudulent things with notarizations. And that happens. And we think that through education, at least partly through education, that we can decrease that. Now, we don't know of any notary in Oregon that's doing that, but we do know that there are fraudulent things happening with notaries in the country. And Michigan and New York feel that that's such a bad situation that they require authentication for every notarization from out of state.
It just doesn't seem logical to me. It seems like it's a duplication, if you will.
I agree, and actually, you know, state law and as I understand it, the principles of the Constitution say that states are supposed to give full faith and credit to the official acts from other states. But these courts do not trust notaries from other states, though.
So. Okay, so currently notaries in Oregon are commissioned through the Office of the Secretary of State. Under current law, they must pass an open book exam, meet other qualifications, English proficiency, and character, and pay a $20 fee. And what we're going to do now is require a three-hour training class.
Three-hour training class. And what's
the expense on the three-hour training class?
To the notaries, there is no expense. This will be offered free. And our intention to offer this training, since it will be a rather large increase, we have about 11,000 notaries a year that get commissioned, would be to offer this through an online training course.
And okay, so it'll be online.
Mm-hmm. It'll be available.
So folks around the state,
right,
in Northeast Oregon will be able
exactly.
To take the class.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions? Anything else you'd like to offer? Thank you very much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
That. Why don't we have Ms. Coleman? Come on up. Welcome. Welcome back.
Yes, welcome back. I'm giving you my testimony.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jan Coleman. I represent the Oregon Association of County Clerks today. I'm the Yamhill County Clerk. As I said, I'm giving you my testimony, plus I'm giving you a testimony that Dee Berman, who is the Crook County Clerk and also the president of the association, did at an earlier hearing. And I'm doing that because she is a real advocate of this bill, being a notary herself and having come on as a notary when she was about 21 years old, and she said she had no idea of the liability that a notary takes on or anything. She was a naive young person, and later learned all this, and she is a real advocate of this training, that notaries become aware of what they're doing when they notarize. And she has also had Tom over for several sessions, invited her title companies in for these sessions and trainings that the state does now. And basically, the bill as presented to you just provides for multiple sessions of these notary courses that could be presented during a year, or, as Tom said, an online course too. It enables people other than the Secretary of State to do these classes, so that the Secretary of State doesn't have to be in all these places. And somebody in a business could also do those classes. There's no extra fees to the notary applicants, and it's just a one-time thing, 3 hours. It's just an one-time 3-hour extra that they do, and there's no requirement upon renewal for another class. We just think it's a great idea. We have to have notaries done in a certain way for documents and recording all the time, and you'd be amazed at what you do see. It seems like a simple thing, but not always. The stamp doesn't want to cover up part of the document and so forth, and oftentimes it does. We actually had one person try to do a notary. He said he notarized by telephone. So you get different things of this sort, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. coming across. So we think 3 hours of training just to say, you know, these are what you can do, these are what you can't do, different scenarios. It's just a real basic thing.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, I represent Crop.
Jan, thanks for coming today. It seems that the problems that are being described are from current notaries. And as I read this bill, this is only, what you're requiring here is only for new notaries. If we got a problem with what current notaries are doing, what's being done to address those issues?
Well, we obviously, if there's a problem with the notary and we can't record because of it, we address that and send the documents back to the people for correction. So we're hoping that that education is coming along, you know, with time. As they do things and do them incorrectly, the feedback is going to tell them that. Also, we feel like if there are more notaries trained, there are more notaries probably in a business, and there are others there to help each other. In other words, if there's a question or something, you know, they've got extra people there to rely on to help with the answer.
So, Mr. Chairman, there is no recurrent training requirements for current notaries. Once you're a notary for life, and you're
perhaps
no.
Yeah. Have Tom come up because he's.
Please come on up. Yeah. Please come on up.
I might be a little bit more aware of that. Again, my name is Tom Rush. I'm with the Secretary of State as a Notary Public analyst. Representative Krupp, currently, of course, notaries have to be recommissioned every 5 years. So, and at that time, they have to reapply, including take the test.
Oh, they do.
And we do still, we have seminars, as I mentioned in my earlier testimony, that are free, and we will continue to have those. So but those are voluntary, and they will have the ability to go to these seminars. The other thing we are looking to do for renewing notaries is the online course that we intend to have available for education will be also available to renewing notaries, and it'll be an online application as well. So they will be encouraged to go to this online application process, and that's when we'll say, hey, you can just go through the education as well for free and get that information. So that's what we're intending to do, and you know, notaries don't stay notaries forever. There'll be some drop-off. But we thought that, we've had feedback from various folks that trying to get current notaries under this bill would be unacceptable to them. They would feel that that was too much of an obstacle for current notaries. But new notaries, that would not be a problem.
So, Mr. Chair, then, if I'm understanding you correctly, Tom, you're saying that when their commissioning expires in 5 years, they will then have to take the 3-hour online course. No.
No, Mr. Chairman, Representative Krupp, they would not have to take the 3-hour course, but they still have the test that they would have to take.
Okay.
And it would obviously be to their benefit to take the online free course or whatever course they would have in order to help them pass the test.
Share with me really quick. Any other questions?
I'm fine.
Okay. Share with me really quick on your 05 seminar locations, how you chose those certain locations.
Oh, okay, here we go. Representative Smith, we have a notary education coordinator who chooses the seminar locations based on the fact, one, we want to get to as much of the state as we possibly can. Two, what has been our past experience in locations. Some locations don't simply have enough notaries for us to do it every year at those locations. Some have 3 or 4 seminars at their locations per year. You know, Portland, Salem, Coos Bay tends to have one quite frequently, as a matter of fact.
Would you folks be willing to add LeGrand and Heppner to your list?
Oh, absolutely. We have done seminars in those areas. I don't know about Heppner, but I know for certain LeGrand is there. It's just that in Eastern Oregon, we tend not to get as many people coming as...
Let me share with you why I raised that issue. As I look at the location list, and I'm thinking of Northeast Oregon, if I'm living in Joseph, Oregon, in order for me to take a class, I'm looking at a 3-hour drive. If I live in Spray, Oregon, I'm looking at a 3-hour drive.
Yeah.
If you could add 2 locations, one to LeGrand, you're going to take care of about 150-mile circle by cutting that down. And if you added one to Heppner, folks wouldn't have to go from Spray to the Dalles or Spray to Bend or Spray to Burns, you know, which to a lot of folks may seem insignificant. But to folks back there, 3 hours is a... You know.
Representative Smith, that's absolutely doable. We're very open to adding sites as the need arises, and we want to go to Northeast Oregon. We want to go to Southeast Oregon, and we certainly will be happy to add sites.
Well, I feel good about 2461. I look forward to having you in Heppner and LeGrand.
Great.
So, thank you. Any other questions for you? Okay, I'm going to ask Paul Cosgrove to come on up and share his thoughts with us. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul Cosgrove, representing the Oregon Financial Service Association, and we're in support of 2461, but we're seeking to have a couple of brief clarifying amendments that I gave to staff today, and they're actually in the hands of the budget chair for approval as well. And I want you to know these amendments were prepared with Representative Gilman, who's the chief sponsor of the bill, and have also been approved by Representative Alan Brown, who was the chair of the Business Labor Committee when the bill was approved. And I can tell you what the -A2 amendments do. In fact, as Ms. Coleman pointed out, that this course is intended to be available to be offered by employers. And many, many notaries in the state are employed by law firms, title companies, the financial institutions like my clients, my members. And we are, the First Amendment on page 1 is in line 8 to just clarify that in that sub B, that the courses can also be offered by employers of notary public, which I think Ms. Coleman pointed out was the intent of the bill. This just clarifies that. The second insertion of new language comes on page 2, after line 10, a new subsection to suggest that, in fact, what would be best with respect to notaries is that if they are going to be working for an employer who has particular kinds of duties, that the training should, at the very least, be concentrated on what those duties are. For example, if the notary is going to be working in a title company, the training should concentrate on notarization of real estate documents. If the notary is working in a law firm, it will deal more with affidavits and the kinds of things that that person is doing in those particular duties. It doesn't change the course content because it says including but not limited to, but suggests that that training should be concentrated on the duties that the notary is most likely to perform.
How do you achieve that if you're in the city of Beaverton and you have 30 people with 30 different interests showing up?
This would be, Mr. Chairman, this would be likely only happening when it is the employer, in fact, offering the training, that the employer would tailor the training to concentrate on those areas that the notary will be performing for the employer. It would not likely affect the general course, online course that you've heard discussed.
That's...
Yeah, Representative.
That brings up an interesting point, only that when you become certified or licensed to be a notary by the state, just like with a law license or other types of license, you're licensed to notarize all types of documents. But if you have somebody who works, for instance, a real estate transactions law firm, over the course of 10 years, they will become trained, I suppose, in only one particular aspect of documents. And I'm wondering if that kind of defeats the purpose of the more broad licensure.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bakian, I think it doesn't for two reasons. First of all, the test that we all take as notaries every 5 years, first initially, and then every 5 years thereafter, covers the full range of duties of a notary. And secondly, the way we've drafted the amendment is to say including but not limited to. So it's intended to have more concentrated effect on the work they're going to do most frequently, but it's not to the elimination of the training on the other duties, nor would the test, of course, be changed. We would still have to, as notaries, be able to know at least the minimum amount about all of those functions. It's intended, I think, to make sure that the documents they do most frequently are done most accurately. But I agree with you, notaries do change. I have nothing further unless there are other questions. Thank you very much.
It's great having you here. Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2461? Seeing no other comments, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2461. Okay. And we are now going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2097. This ought to be fun.
Can't wait.
Adrian. Morning.
Morning, Adrian.
Good morning. Thank you.
We'll cross.
He was here. He stepped out.
He needs to come and participate, I think. Definitely think he needs to come and participate.
All righty. Well, Adrian, why don't you share with us a little bit about House Bill 2097 before we start public testimony?
Thank you. Subcommittee, I will do that. House Bill 2097 is before you in the A-engrossed version. It came from House Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs Committee. It deals with arborist licenses and the programs offered by Oregon Landscape Contractors Board, and it also, because of its provisions to move all of arborist licensing out of this Construction Contractors Board, the fiscal impact information that I've provided to you with your packet does indicate the potential for shifting licensees between the two boards' jurisdictions. And that is a high-level summary. It looks like you'll have plenty of opportunity to hear more detail about it.
Indeed. Thank you, Adrian. And just to let you all know that, and I suppose that the chair can address this here shortly, this bill creates a certain amount of grief amongst members of the legislature and certainly this committee. And I think the chair will certainly entertain various ideas about how to deal with that grief. So, Mr. Chair, Adrian has just basically expressed what the bill is and does. And therefore, carry on, sir.
All righty. What I'm going to do is we're going to start off by bringing up Bill Parsons. Get his take on this issue, and then we're going to go from there. So, welcome. Okay, if you could just introduce yourself for the record.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, my name is Bill Parsons. I've owned and operated my tree removal business in Cottage Grove area for the last 15 years. I'm opposed to House Bill 2097. It will require me to take an arborist's exam or become a certified arborist. By definition, an arborist is a specialist in the care and maintenance of trees, and arboriculture, by definition, is the cultivation of trees and shrubs. My business does neither. I primarily do tree removal, which is removing dead or dying trees or trees deemed hazardous by a homeowner. Under the current bill, if I'm unable to pass one of the exams that is offered to me, I'm out of business. I recently visited the website of the Pacific Northwest chapter of the ISA and clicked on how to pick an arborist. One of the things that stated in there was that certification does not guarantee performance. I'm going to read that to you again. With their own words, they say that certification does not guarantee performance. I couldn't agree more. This bill will not raise the bar for the industry. It will only drive out the other parts of the industry. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'd love to answer any questions if you have them.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I have one.
Yeah, Representative Buckley.
You use the term industry as almost like inclusive of all that would be arborists and all that would be people who fell trees like you. I don't know what the industry is. What do you mean when you say
industry? When I define industry, I would say that the industry is anything that has anything to do with trees in general. Removal, care, maintenance, any of those things. I mean, the industry incorporates, under my definition, what it incorporates would be anywhere from somebody that removes a stump all the way up to somebody that removes trees, limbs them, people that prune fruit trees. Anything that has to do with a tree, I would classify underneath the industry.
Including growers like nurseries?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
Thank
that great
you.
Testimony. Okay, come on up. New boss of the cattlemen. Congratulations. You're going to do a fabulous job.
Chair Smith and members of the committee, my name is Kay Teasel, and I'm a co-owner of High Riggers, Inc. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to testify on House Bill 2097. My husband, Michael Teasel, could not make it to testify today. However, he asked me to provide you with his written testimony, which I have. Michael logged for 20 years, and 3 years ago we started a tree service due to the decline of logging opportunities in Oregon. Now our livelihood is being threatened again by House Bill 2097. This is unneeded legislation. Many of our customers have told us no other tree service would touch a tree that big, and Michael safely removed it for a fair price. Some of our customers' comments are attached to Michael's written testimony. Clearly demonstrates his ability. We have been able to stay in business by keeping our overhead low, rates reasonable, and providing the necessary skills to specialize in the niche market of large and hazardous tree removals in residential areas. House Bill 2097 will force Michael to take time away from our business and make us incur more expenses to study and take an exam on parts of arboriculture which we do not practice or profit from. Study materials are very costly with limited availability, and there are no instructor-taught courses for the exam in Oregon. 72% of the arborist exam covers subjects that are not part of our business, things like soil injections for nutrition and fertilization, tree planting, disease identification, tree diagnosis, tree risk assessments. On the rare occasion a customer inquires about any of those things, we refer them to a certified arborist who makes a living being trained in these areas and we are happy to work closely with him to meet the customer's needs. On page 2 of his testimony outlines that the subject matter tested included on the ISA exam. The arborist exam the landscape board will require prior to licensing has a 30% pass rate. There are only about 500 licensed arborists in Oregon, and a lot of those are foresters. So nearly half of the 900 tree services in Oregon are at risk of going out of business as a direct result of this bill. This calculates into potential loss of millions of dollars per year for Oregon's economy and loss of jobs. The ISA does have an exam, a tree worker climber special exam, which covers safety, removal, rigging, pruning, cabling, climbing knots, tree sciences, and tree identification. These are the expertise required for the type of work that we do. However, even the landscape board testified in the previous committee hearing that there isn't a problem with the current licensing system for tree services. If a tree service isn't qualified or does not do a good job, it is near impossible for them to stay in the business. They have to maintain the bond, liability insurance, and the customer base to stay in this business that is extremely competitive. There is no reason the current licensing system should be changed. If tree service companies are planting trees and doing soil injections, then they are profiting from it, and they should have a separate license for those activities that fall under the definition of landscaping. Consumers currently have a choice to hire a certified arborist if they prefer. They're clearly identified in the Yellow Pages. And being certified does not give the skills that are achieved from a lifelong of experience. Please don't allow the big companies to continue to grow and inflate their prices at the expense of a small tree services being forced out of business. I strongly encourage you to vote no on House Bill 2097. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Avakian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned a couple times that if this bill were to pass it, it could potentially put people out of business.
That's correct.
Some people would assume that if you had the licensure that it would broaden your ability to get different kinds of customers or do different kinds of things and enhance a business. So would you be more specific about what it is in this bill that would push somebody out of business?
Chair Smith, Representative Akin, yes, not being able to pass the exam puts you out of business, as simple as that.
Somebody could just go back to school, take the courses, and then pass the exam.
Chair Smith, Representative Akin, as I said, there are no instructor taught courses, and someone like Michael, who's, you know, he's logged 20 years, his whole experience, I mean, he's a 10th grade dropout. Who's to say he could study and take these, you know, technical questions and remember it all and pass the exam?
I'm getting there, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'm guessing, too, that it costs a significant amount of money to go back to school, take the courses, as well as maybe the licensure.
Chair Smith, Representative Akin, that's a very good point. And furthermore, we've invested our whole savings into this business. We've gone through the growing pains for 3 years. We're just now starting to make a profit, and now we're going to change the rules on us? I just don't think that's fair.
One more.
Please.
And I would guess, too, but I don't know, and you know the industry better than I do, that if someone's going to go back to school for that kind of intense study, that there's the potential they also need to not be working while they're studying for the exam. Is that a factor?
That's an excellent point, and that's what I meant by taking time away from our business. He doesn't get home a lot of times till 9 o'clock at night. He's running the business. He has like one other guy working for him. He has to bid the jobs. He has to do the jobs. Where he'd find time to study, I couldn't tell you. Thank you for the opportunity.
All righty, let's go. Who do we have here? Gary Neubergel. Sorry if I mispronounce your last name there. You're welcome. If you could just introduce yourselves for the record.
Thank you. Representative Smith, Assembly. I'm not a speaker. I'm a tree trimmer, so bear with me here. I got involved with this whole process. I had my first meeting with Michael Snyder in May. The reason I had a meeting with Mr. Snyder was because I became aware of this ordinance, House bill rather, through a landscape friend of mine. prior to that, I knew nothing about it. And the thing that upsets me about this whole process is it was done without any input from the tree industry, except for a select few. When I met with Mr. Snyder, I asked why this was going through and how did it get promoted in the beginning. He suggested that it was promoted by the arborists, and I asked who were the arborists. Mr. Snyder brought up a couple of names, and I said, so we have a house bill that is a house bill for a couple of people from the industry, and that's a couple meaning two were the names that he gave me. So we dove into that a little further, and in the process I found out that none of my colleagues knew anything about this ordinance. This is in May of this year. This House bill is to take effect January 1. If you are one of those unlucky people that renew your CCB January 1 or in the early parts of 06, you're going to need to be certified between now and 06, according to the House bill as it was presented. I understand there's an amendment now to produce that ahead of year, which is an agreement that we came to at a meeting that I got together with some of the other people in the tree industry in the local Portland area. Some of those fellows, after the meeting and what have you, have suggested that they weren't completely happy with even a year extension of that. As a matter of fact, they were very unhappy about the process. So I'm here in defense of Mr. Snyder. I had told him that we were probably going to accept that, and through meetings I called people last night and what have you, in representing the fellows that we had this meeting with, it appears to me that people are unhappy with us in general and would like it to be denied. As the other people that have spoken have said, this has a huge impact. I've been in the tree industry for 27 years, and that 27 years has been high impact. It's been 6 and 7 days a week, late days, long days. And I would not trade my skills and abilities with my company with someone who has just taken a written test and has very little experience in the tree industry. Been in trees when they're tipping over, and I've looked at the root systems that after they have fallen, climbed past trees that have been topped to analyze what they've been done in the past. That experience I wouldn't trade for anything. So this written test that comes into play, I've had different people say, I'm not afraid of that test. Well, I am. The reason I am is I don't have a good memory at this point. 55 years old, and for me to have to know the Latin names of trees, I haven't used that in 27 years, and I don't anticipate I'm going to use it next year. So that to me, as the lady testified, there's just a huge amount of this bill that has absolutely nothing to do with my trade. We have 12 employees, and those 12 employees, many of them have 3 and 4 children, so this is a huge impact. If we're looking at small business carrying the weight of the they claim that they pay the taxes of the world. This has a huge impact to the economy and certainly to a lot of families. So I'm anxious to have this denied, I guess, at this point. When I went down to talk to Michael Snyder, it was ironic because I had just gotten a letter from him shortly before that I was going to be penalized for having my ad in the landscape section of the phone book. My ad in the phone book says Citywide Tree Service. What would that indicate to you folks? I would presume Citywide Trees are trees. So at the bottom of this notice that I got that I was going to be penalized was a statement that said something to the effect that we will not go easy on you if we catch you doing X, Y, and Z. Well, I haven't done X, Y, and Z my whole career. I don't own a shovel. I don't own a lawnmower. I don't do any landscaping, period. But we're into this punitive society anymore that, I got this letter from him. I don't know why you wouldn't look in construction under the yellow pages to find a roofer. I think when you want a tree business, you may very well look under the landscape section to find a tree business. If I was in there and said Citywide Tree Service and landscaping, I could understand the penalty. This is a law already. It's already a House bill that they have the legal right to do that. However, when you get penalized for stuff like that, I don't want it to go any further. We don't need any more legislation in this industry. A great deal of the people that run tree businesses today are grassroots people that spin off from companies like mine. They maybe, like the lady said, have a 10th grade education. I happen to have a 10th grade education, but have done very well in the tree business. So that gives people that are blue-collar workers a chance and an opportunity to go out and have a business to do well, to where otherwise you may take care of them in the state system. So a lot of those people that are for this bill, I have to tell you, are large companies that have a lot to be gained by this. You might ask what they have to be gained. What they have to be gained is that the harder you make it on a small company, the easier it gets for a big company. They have a support staff that, by golly, if they need to be certified, they'll have classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and they'll bring their whole staff up through the ranks. I happen to be the dispatcher, the equipment procurer, the quality control guy, the customer relations guy in my company. I have a secretary and myself, and you won't find any claims on our CCB. We have no derogatory things on our record whatsoever. So that indicates to me the quality of control that we're doing in our company. We have no complaints whatsoever, 27 years. So we don't need this ordinance. I just had a son that was...
Can I interrupt for just a minute?
Certainly.
Representative Vakian.
Since we're creating a record here, and I want to make sure it's really clear, tell me what you mean by claims on your CCB.
And well, while you're doing that, very quickly, just share your name with us once again for the record.
My name is Gary Nebergall, N-E-B-E-R-G-A-L-L.
Tell us what the CCB is and what that means to you as a business.
The Construction Contractors Board was formed, and I was involved in that process when it was formed. Initially, that board was formed. The initial goal was to make sure that people had state industrial insurance and liability insurance. I don't have any problem with that. I give my insurance papers out to every customer so that it will trigger that mechanism in their head to say, gee, he brought up insurance. I wonder if the past fellow was insured. I was all in favor of that. The other thing that they pushed for was to have names on the side of your truck. If you're going down the road, somebody should be able to say, gee, that's Joe Blow's tree service. That was passed, and we became members of the Construction Contractors Board. And they also are the person that you would call if you thought somebody was working across the street without insurance. You would call the Construction Contractors Board and say, gee, we got guys here that are working without a license. Could you come out and take a look?
So there currently is state oversight of your business through
yes,
the Construction Contractors Board to hold those that don't do the job right accountable. Is that a fair statement?
It's a fair statement, but I'll also be very fair. I'll be fair with every statement that I give you, and that is that the Construction Contractors Board is very, very understaffed. They have, I forget, two or three people within the state that oversee that. The Landscape Construction Board claims that they will be, in defense of Mike, better staffed, and I can't disagree with that. I can't agree with it. I don't know how they're going to be staffed, but they're talking about putting in a half to one person, as I recall. Is that correct, Mike? So when we have a state that you're putting on a person and a half, and we were hugely understaffed with the Construction Contractors Board. Matter of fact, the majority of us that have been in any kind of a lengthy business have relied on that not whatsoever. I called one time, and they said, well, get the license number of the guys and call it in to me. That's not my job to go over and get in a conflict with a contractor that's across the street.
I understand.
So.
Yeah, thanks.
At the same time, I started to say, and this doesn't have anything to do with my son, but I had a son that had catastrophic illness. I was fighting with the state, to get benefits for him at the same time that we're putting a bill before the government here that is absolutely unnecessary, totally unnecessary, and had very little success for him for quite a long time. So it's something that is very strong in my mind.
I appreciate your comments, Gary. I have to tell you, if you provide tree service as well as you present to this committee, I would hire you in a moment. So,
well, if I could talk to you a longer time when I'm not, my voice isn't cracking, I'd appreciate that. But
we've just received a notice that a session which is going on upstairs, they're about to go into caucuses, so we're going to take a recess here for a few minutes. We definitely want to continue with the public testimony on this. I want to share one thought, though, for those folks who will be coming up when we return. I'm struggling with certification. And I want to pass a story on just very quickly. My older brother put himself through school as a commercial fisherman, went out of Depot Bay,
And if any of you know Depot Bay is a very short little jetty to get through, and in stormy weather can be very, very rough and difficult. That's where he fished out of. He now is required to take an exam with the Oregon Marine Board to prove that he knows how to operate a boat, whether it's a little rowboat with a 15-horsepower motor or his 40-foot commercial fishing boat. And so those who are going to come up are going to have to truly convince me the need for certification can outweigh experience. And so with that, we're going to recess as we go upstairs into caucus. I anticipate we're going to be about 20 minutes. Good morning, still. It's 10:56 on Wednesday, June 29th, 2005. We're going to come out of recess and reopen up the public hearing on House Bill 2097A. And we still have you with us.
I just need 2 more minutes of your time.
All righty.
I just, in summary, this bill seems to have been in progress for quite some time in its present format, or what we have on the House bill at the present time. The tree industry in general was left out of this process, and I think at bare minimum, my take on this thing, first off, my first goal would be to have the industry grandfathered in that are already licensed contractors. And that way, new people that are coming into the industry will know the rules that they sign up on. I didn't sign up on a rule that said in 27 years I'll have to take a test and become somebody that I'm not now. So those people that are licensed now, if we grandfather those people in, I would support this bill, everybody. At bare minimum, the industry needs time. That those people that you talked about in LeGrand and Ben and what have you, they have not a clue of this, other than the fact that after the door was open, the Construction Contractors Board sent out a notice that was sent out in May. So those people, some of the people in the Portland metro area and, you know, maybe Salem that are bigger municipalities have gotten the word out through the grapevine, but it certainly wasn't public knowledge. So that would be my goal, is to either grandfather the people in that have been here under those past regulations and make the new people pass that test. We got more done, excuse me, just 1 second, but we got more done out in the hallway here because people were not invited, but people were together. If the tree industry would have done that in the initial phases 2 or 3 years ago when this whole thing was a concept, we wouldn't be here today. We would all be in unison, but everybody was left out of the program. Not everybody, but the majority of people, I will guarantee, were left out of the program. We got more done out here trying to windmill to make this thing fit the different people involved than we did in 3 years because we weren't invited. So,
Representative Abakian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought I understood your personal position or your side's position until you talked about the grandfathering thing. So I guess what I'd like to know is, do you think that it's necessary for folks that are in your profession to take the arboriculture exam?
I don't think that it's presently for myself, I don't think that's necessary. I've got a lot of years of experience. As far as the industry goes, what I'm trying to do is negotiate something that is acceptable for the old timers and the new timers. The guys that want to make this a college graduate industry instead of a blue collar industry, if they want to do that, that's fine and dandy for people that are coming into the industry. But I don't want people to be bumped out of the industry and close their business because they can't pass a test because of their memory. And that's my position.
Well, I guess, may I?
Of course.
Sure.
I guess what I'm struggling with is whether or not people that do your kind of business and the other folks that came in, is there something regarding the education and the testing that this bill proposes that your industry needs in order to provide good service to the public? Because if the answer to that is yes, then quite frankly, if I don't know why it wouldn't apply to all of you then. And if the answer to that is no, then I don't understand the grandfathering in piece. Because, I'm not
criticizing your testimony at all. All of your testimony has been wonderful in helping this committee today. But if you come in to us and say,
you know, my memory isn't well enough that I can't get through the test, then somebody like me who has to make a decision about whether you should be tested as to competency, I would then have to think, well, then shouldn't the test apply to everybody who's currently performing the duties?
Well, I would ask you to be in my shoes for a minute and fed your family for 27 years, done a job that we do work that's no better than anybody else's, but we do top-notch quality work. And I've done it for 27 years, fed my family, fed my staff's family, what have you, and put yourself in my shoes, and all of a sudden you have the potential of being out of business. I can't hire you as a certified arborist to come and help me in my business and become the certified arborist of our company. It has to be me, the person who has taken the business into this test. So it's something that is a hardship on myself that has the potential of putting me out. There's all kinds of ramifications. I'm saying we don't have time to go into it, but the sale of my business... When I retire, I'm 55 years old, when I retire, I can't sell it to a person who comes up that has a business degree that wants to run a business. We do $1 million worth of tree work a year, and I can't sell it to somebody. Who am I going to sell it to, a tree guy that makes $20 an hour?
Let me ask you the question this way, then, for the new folks that are coming up in the industry. You got some young buck who wants to learn the trade, and is him hooking up with somebody like you and working alongside with you and learning the trade and gaining the same kind of experience as you good enough to perform that profession, or is it necessary that they get the education and go through this exam in order to be competent to perform your profession?
That's not a black and white question, and the reason it isn't is because Terrell Collier, who is into plant health care and what have you, we do tree pruning and removal only. Terrell is into plant health care, which is disease control, you know, fertilization, what have you. We don't do that. So there are some areas of that the ISA will help greatly. It won't help me to know what an Acer palmatum is. If I know it by a maple, I'm satisfied with that, and so are my clients. So there are areas in that. If you want to be, that's why we've always had this. I don't know why the people that are certified now are pushing for this in the first place, because all of a sudden the people that are not certified are going to be on the same plane as them. And not only are we going to beat them on price and on other areas, but we're also going to compete with them on the certified area as well. So, but I would like to see supply and demand dictate what goes on. People know when they get a bad job as a rule. And to me, we don't have a great deal of a problem with the trees aren't being butchered all over the city of Portland right now, I can tell you that. There's a few jobs here and there that you'll see that we still have the old logger influence and the old farmer savvy, but in general, there's pretty good quality workmanship going on.
Or if I may,
please.
I think I'm understanding you, but what I'm concluding from your testimony here is that it's reasonable to begin now subjecting your particular part of this industry to the education and licensure that this bill demands.
I think that that's a reasonable request. I won't deny it.
Okay.
I think that in the future, those people will know the rules of the game, and they can either become a carpenter or they can become a tree guy. And in order to be a tree guy, you got to know this, that, and the other thing.
Okay.
But for the guy that's been here for a long time, to change the rules midstream, I think is unfair.
Thank
you very, very much. Appreciate your time.
Appreciate it. All righty. Joe Kittle. Welcome. You can just introduce yourself for the record. You already did.
I'm Joe Kittle with Trees by Joe out of the Portland area, Sherwood to be specific. I've been in business for 25 years, self-taught. My construction contractors board is 62248 when they enacted that to come in. I have a college degree. It has nothing to do with horticulture. I do have a minor in science. Got into the tree business because I couldn't sit still being an accountant. Over the years, there's always stuff that arises that takes away from you being able to do any work. The Construction Contractors Board was placed back in the early 90s within the tree industry by a outfit called Pruitt Tree Service, which now is no longer in business. And that gentleman enacted this, I felt, to eliminate competition for his own business. Because he was a gentleman who was a college graduate, knew nothing about the trees, had never been in the trees, but he was a very good businessman. And I see this tree care industry in those two parts. You get the people who live with the trees and you get the people that want to dictate to the trees. Our bigger organizations, which are well-educated and do no disservice to anything, I think serve a great function. But I also believe that the small industry, the one-man, two-man show, where the guy was brought up by his father or had lived out in the forest, has an understanding of actually how this tree, shrub, and or what is growing. A certified arborist is, to become one, you simply need to take a test. And to pass this test. And this test is a test dealing with multiple choice. Now, if they truly wanted to find out what your educational value was, it would be an essay test. Because that will truly tell you what you really know, instead of being able to memorize Latin species or, you know, the genus and species of a plant. And I feel that a certified arborist is no disservice to the industry, but I don't always feel that it is the only factor that the industry has. To address your issue earlier, that I believe practical application is a lot better than the educated value. But put them both together and it's wonderful. Basically, a certified arborist, as I see it, it qualifies you as a tree person, but it does not, actually it quantifies you, but it does not qualify you.
Let me ask you something else about what you just said, about the combination kind of being the optimum, the experience and the education both. Some of the folks that have testified today that have kind of spent their careers doing a particular thing, like tree removal, are they, is there a notion out there somewhere that they're not as competent as they should be in order to continue in that profession? So something additional is needed now. Is that kind of what's led to this, to the issue even coming before us?
Well, tree removal is basic. It's gone. Tree trimming, so the plant has future growth, I think is the main aspect that we run into here. And people have to understand how a plant growth goes. And I know certified arborists who do not know how the plant growth goes. But yet they can tell somebody how it goes. Yet when you place them in the field to rectify the problem, they can't do it. You have to almost get right in there. And over the years of educating the gentlemen who have worked with me, I've been right there and they've been right underneath my arm working. And I'm telling them why I'm making this cut or why I'm not making this cut. And each and every tree is different. So the practical application to me far exceeds what the educational aspect from learning it in a book or a test does. Though, obviously, if you have more knowledge in theory, it helps with your practical application.
I don't want to belabor it, but I guess what I'm struggling with here is I'm trying to decide where the problem lies here. There's obviously one faction of folks that think there are people doing things out there that is a disservice to the public because they don't have the experience, the education, whatever it is, to protect the public. There's another group of folks that are saying, we've been doing this for years. Our service is just fine because it's limited to a specific area. What I'm inferring from what you're saying is that there's probably not very many people out there that all they do is remove trees. That when you have a tree service, that you're managing the tree. You're caring for the tree in a lot of respects. And so in order to protect the public generally, you need to have this kind of education because there's just very few people that only remove trees. And that's why you say there needs to be a combination between education and experience.
Well, I'm saying that basically because obviously when you have optimal education and optimal experience, that puts you at the very elite level. You know, where if you go out there and go up a tree and just start cutting, and you really don't know what you're cutting, but you're cutting, that doesn't tell you anything. Then you get on the other side, if somebody's telling you what you need to cut, because the book has told you this is what you're supposed to do, that's a pretty hard application for the person actually doing the work to do.
It's hard to believe there's people out there that would literally climb up their own tree and start cutting them down.
No way. It homeowner does it all the time.
I make my neighbors nervous when I get out. And I've learned my lesson and have contacted a professional. Any more thoughts for us today?
I'm a firm believer, and I like to see competition. I don't like to eliminate anybody from business. I will allow their own failures to eliminate them from business. I don't like government regulations limiting what people can or cannot do, basically to favor myself. So that's pretty much where I stand is, you know, the consumer can make his decision because there's information out there for the consumer to make his decision on.
Appreciate those thoughts. What I'm going to do really quickly is call Michael Snyder and Bill Cross both up. If both of you could come on up really quick and why don't we start with Michael and then we'll go to Bill.
Chair Smith, a member of the committee, thank you very much for allowing me to come here. For the record, my name is Michael A. Snyder. I'm the administrator for the Landscape Contractors Board. This bill was given to the legislature due from the Landscape Contractors Board. They were approached by the arborists in the state of Oregon to ask if they could increase their ability to do arboriculture work, which include planting of trees. One of the things that an arborist does is prune trees, remove trees, and then when they remove a tree, they like to replace the tree with something that's there for them. And current law only allows people that to do up to $500 worth of replacement planting per job site without having a landscape contractor's license. Therefore, for an arborist to do their work, they had to be licensed with the CCB to do the pruning above 15 feet, which is where the cutoff is for pruning of trees.
Yes, I'm clear. So, and I apologize if I offend anyone. And I want to be very clear on this. Right. In order for an entrepreneur to plant a tree, they can do that up to $500. After that, they need to have
a landscape contracting business.
So what if they go and they buy someone just goes and buys an expensive Japanese maple?
They would have to have a landscape contracting business.
Plant one tree?
That's correct. If it exceeded $500 in cost.
And that's in statute?
That's in statute.
Okay.
It's not considered casual, minor, and inconsequential. It's a large tree that has a significant amount of potential for death or whatever else, so there needs to be some kind of protection on that. But anyway,
just really quick, I don't want to let go of that one. I'm from Eastern Oregon.
Got it.
We plant our own trees. What happens? Are landowners exempt from that?
Yes. Plant our own and beaver sometimes
your
own too.
Land. It's if you are
up
doing
$500
chair. It's if you're doing it for compensation. If you're acting as a contractor, you have to be licensed to do that work.
Okay. Thank you.
So anyway. The ability then for an arborist to do their work was restricted, and so they asked to come to the board to look at a way to doing this. So this is why this bill was introduced, to allow them to do replacement tree planting of any amount if they were arborist. So the exam requirement that is given to the ISA was one of the ways of testing competency for arboriculture. The Landscape Contractors Board would also be administering an arborist test because we wouldn't want to require everybody to have an ISA certification. They would have their own test. The Landscape Contractors have their own test to be comparable to the ISA, but would not give them a certification with the ISA. That's an association certification rather than a license. So we had that provision in there for people to become arborists. They had to prove their competency through an examination. So they can either take the ISA or they take the LCB exam and were able to get their license. That's basically what this bill was to transfer them then from the CCB to the LCB and get a more green industry type of regulation through the LCB.
Thank you.
Mr. Cross.
Mr. Chair, committee member, my name is Bill Cross. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association. As Mr. Snyder just presented the bill, that's how it was conceptually presented to the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association a year ago, quite some time ago, and because some of the landscape contractors are also licensed by the CCB for tree services, they were thinking, gee, this would be nice from a regulatory streamlining perspective to have our license all under one roof, with one board and one bond and that type of thing. Obviously, you have discovered that there are implications beyond simply taking a category of arborists, moving them from one governing board to another, and we're very sensitive to some of the issues that have been raised as an association, and are, you know, did not intend to endorse, when we supported the bill, something of that breadth. We are very committed to seeing if we could work with the various parties to see if maybe there's a way to, you know, through either the scope of work or the scope of licensure or grandfathering or you know, there are some different options that we could look at maybe to ensure that, wait a minute, what we're really looking at is what the original concept was, and not a policy decision on your part that would result in entrepreneurs losing their ability to perform what they've been doing for a number of years. I know your time is running short. You're intending to get out of here before the fall. We appreciate that as well. But we'd be willing to sit down and see if there's a solution.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate your leadership on that. What do you say if we allow you folks and anyone else out there a little bit of time this afternoon to work through this and see if an agreement can be reached, and have you folks come back and talk with us later this afternoon? Again, I'm very, very reluctant to move this to a work session. But I want to give the benefit of the doubt.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, finish, please.
And I'd like to have you folks have a chance to get together. And I invite everyone back there to go and sit down and figure out if there's some way to make House Bill 2097 work for all entrepreneurs in the state of Oregon, and to report back to us, Representative Avakian.
What I would look for is, I'm not interested as much in what I would consider a turf battle between professions as I am in the notion that these boards are, in my mind, really consumer protection agencies. And what is not clear to me are all the different delineations of professions within this whole notion of landscaping or tree service, whatever we want to call it, and at what point the public needs the protection of giving people an exam and requiring education. That I have no idea where to draw that line, but can simply say that from the first couple people that testified today, it seems persuasive to me that there is a line at which, below the line, and below not being a qualitative remark, but that experience counts. Experience does it. They've proved it. And so I need help from you folks on where you think that line should be drawn and who needs to be included above the line of examination. Did I say that clearly enough?
Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, I think we understand, and our problem was not understanding that, you know, before today or the last couple of days when actually this all occurred, because there was, and I think you heard a reference to a meeting, I'm going to say a month ago or something, where some of the tree trimmers, I don't want to offend anybody, but...
Mr. Listen, the issue came up very quickly for all of us, and I don't think anybody's placing blame anywhere. It's a complicated issue.
on a lot of different levels, and it just came up very quickly, and now we're having to sort through the complexities of it. That's all it is. Yeah.
So why don't we do this? I'm going to, and I know we have more folks who would like to testify on this, but I think the best thing for us to do is have those who are interested parties meet with these two gentlemen and figure out if there's a compromise that can be reached on this. And we will meet back later this afternoon. How's your schedule, Representative Avakian?
I need to be out of this building by 3 o'clock.
So if we did 2 p.m., would that work for you, Adrian?
I believe this room is scheduled for the Senate sub.
From 1 to 3. We're limiting your time even further now. 12:30.
There's yet another idea here if you want to.
Back in.
Do you want to look, or do you have about 2 minutes to listen to a conceptual?
You bet. Why don't we do that? The reason we're trying to do this is time is running out, and again, I'm at this point, I'm not compelled to move this forward, but I want to give the benefit of the doubt. And so,
thank you for letting me approach and give you some alternatives here. My name is Terrell Collier. Collier Arbor Care in Portland, Oregon. And maybe just a brief little background. I come from a mom-and-pop business. My dad started a business in 1937. But I do have a degree, and my dad encouraged me to get a degree. And so we've grown our business, I believe, as a result of my education, but he was always pushing for it. And so from my standpoint, in my ideal world, I'm all about certification because I've been on the ISA certification board. I've been a president of our Arborist Society. I contribute a lot of my volunteer time to education. Like yesterday, I helped sponsor electrical hazard awareness program for arborists. So I'm all about education, and I believe in testing as some minimum competency as a bar that you have to jump over before you can start operating the business. I also respect my other competitors, if you will, and I know that they feel real strongly about being transferred directly, if you're already a CCB member, into the LCB. I'm against that without being a certified arborist, but as to a compromise, I think that we're going to be a lot better with the LCB for a couple of different reasons. And even if we need to transfer everybody over that's a CCB, that's still better than killing the bill. And the reasons for that is that we're with another green industry group. The LCB is going to be able to give better consumer protection because I've seen this man at work and I know what he does. Being with the contractors, I don't think they really advocate anything about trees. They're contractors. So I think from a consumer protection standpoint, consumers are going to get better bang for their buck with the LCB. From a budgetary standpoint, I think going into theirs is a lot better. I mean, I just think, I know maybe Mike could testify to that, but I just think they're going to be a lot more efficient because they already understand green industry issues. Okay, construction contractors don't understand that whatsoever. So there's a lot of reasons for moving this forward, and I would propose that, even though I'm reluctant to do this as a compromise, is to allow the transference in there. And we've kicked around, okay, do we just transfer everybody that's already in the CCB, or do we only transfer people that say that have been in the CCB for 5 years, you know, and that would give kind of an experience there. But I think we all agree, as you heard the testimony earlier, that any new people coming in, if they know what the rules are, that's okay. What they want to see is that we transfer or grandfather people in that are already existing in the CCB. And if you want to put an experience, you know, number of years experience, you have to be with the CCB for a number of years, I would support that. But if you're not going to move it forward, I would say then move everybody, everybody in.
Let's do this. I'm going to there. Thank you very much, Mr.
Collier,
for your testimony. What I'm going to do, in fairness to everyone, is I'm going to ask if Mr. Newhouse would like to testify just very quickly. And then what my intention is to recess at 11:30 to give you folks 1 hour until 12:30 to sit down and figure out if you can work through a conceptual agreement, and then come back at 12:30. So welcome, Mr. Newhouse.
My name is Elwood Newhouse. I own Elwood's Tree Service here in Salem. I've been in business about 25 years and been doing this occupation since 78. I'm for the bill for education, for more of the education part of preserving our urban forests. A lot of our trees that were deemed hazardous today and that we are removing are from prior neglect, from wrongful pruning, bad pruning cuts, topping cuts, or like yourself, your homeowner trying to prune the tree. But we're more into the education part of it for preserving our urban forest, because we do lose a lot of trees in the urban forest due to improper pruning techniques. And I think through education, it would better the industry. Myself, I used to be a topper. One day, City Parks man took me out to lunch, introduced me to some books on arboriculture. I then became certified, and now I have a different feeling toward trees when I take a branch off. I mean, I feel if you don't know how the branch grew on the tree, how do you know how to take it off? Because if you do make the improper cut on a tree, it's detrimental. Trees don't heal. They deteriorate after improper pruning. So I'm totally for it, and I'm a certified arborist, and I had a hard time taking the test. I'm one of the guys, too. I mean, I passed high school with a D average, barely got through it. They got me out just because they didn't want to see me next year. But I did take the test. It took me a couple times to pass it. I have a difficult time reading, but I got CDs through the ISA, and I just, as I was running through town doing bids, I listened to the CDs and educated myself that way. And that's where I'm at today with it. And we do practice proper arboriculture.
Thank you for that testimony. Would you be willing to work with these folks for the next hour?
My time's limited today.
Time's limited, I know. And I feel that way because I know I've got nothing but entrepreneurs sitting joining you. Again, I think the struggle we're having is where's that line? And you know, the notion of education and protecting our urban forests is a very solid argument. So,
yeah, it is.
Thank you.
Before I go meet, can I?
Please.
I just want to make one thing clear, because there's been this talk of the grandfathering, and if everybody meets and comes back and has some kind of an agreement like that, I at least, even if there's an agreement, am not persuaded yet that everybody needs to take the test and be licensed, even if you guys all agree on it. So when you come back, I need information from both sides as to where, you heard me talking about where the line gets drawn. I need some information from both sides as to why a line should be drawn and where it should be drawn, even if you have an agreement.
I would very much concur with those comments. So what we're going to do, is this going to work okay, Emily? If we recess for 1 hour, and then what we're going to have to do, committee, is we're only going to have about 15 minutes to work through it.
Or not.
Okay. And that's kind of where we are, because we have to be out of here by 1 o'clock.
Be back at 12:30.
All righty. That's where we are. We're going to recess till then. And once again, resume the public hearing on House Bill 2097. Now, who wants to come before us and share their thoughts? Why don't we have Mr. Cross and Michael, if you could come up as well. Michael, all right, come on up. Welcome. If you could just introduce yourself one more time for the record.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, my name is Michael A. Snyder. I'm administrator for the Landscape Contractors Board. We have had a meeting outside in the hallway for last hour, and I don't believe we've come to consensus. There seems to be your question about the level is the point in what should I call it, contention. And so I believe it'd be best interest in this case for this group to go back during the interim and work this out and come back with a different bill that might solve these problems that we're facing today with this. So that's what I believe has happened over the last hour.
Today was a good start on the discussion, and we'll just leave it at that.
Thank you very much. All righty. See no other business. Actually, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2097. See no other business before the committee. We are finally adjourned for the day. Thank you.